Dee Snider. Thank you. Welcome to our show.
Great to be here.
Oh my God.
Seen you in a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
And for people that don't know, you and I did a TV show together.
Yep.
Who Will Rock You?
Yes.
And that was super fun.
We were the judges. Only two judges. They didn't need more. We had it down.
Need
we
more. Could no.
We didn't need anybody. We didn't need the bands. No, we
could just us.
I was hoping we could work together again.
That
I
was so fun. Yeah. We laughed so much.
We did.
In between the takes, me doing the little videos.
Yes. I saw the little clips.
Yeah.
I saw that.
It was super
behind
funny.
Behind the scenes, yes. And Gabby and yeah, we saw toured each other. Together.
Yes, in Germany.
In Germany. Yes. I was shocked to see her here.
What? I said Gabby?
I can't get rid of her. Well, I mean, it's not like there's only one Gabby in the world. But I think you've
like,
mentioned
what,
to
you,
me.
You? You? Oh, my God.
Yeah,
what are you doing here?
Yeah, I was shocked. I said, oh, this must be Gabby. Gabby?
That was a fun tour, though.
Yeah.
It was.
It was a great tour.
It was great. It's
really
amazing.
Great.
You know about it. The audience doesn't know about it. But it's, what do they call it?
Rock meets
Rock
classic.
Rock
meets classic. And it sells really big in Germany.
Yeah.
They love it. It's been going on for years.
Huge
playing arenas.
It's
awesome.
Yeah. Munich was amazing.
Yeah.
Huge arenas.
Yeah, no, I saw all the videos and the pictures and you guys singing together and it was amazing.
Yeah, so one night early on, I told before the show, I told the girls, it's a general term, girls that I, you know, was pretty much retired. So my voice is kind of out of shape. So I went to Germany and sang in a while, and now I have to do 10, 50, whatever shows we're doing. And like the third night, I'm kind of burned out, and I got to do Highway to Hell. And I tell the team, the backup singers, listen, if I like hand you the mic, just take it. So I get to the part in Highway to Hell. I said, I can't sing anymore. I just stick it in Gabby's face. No problem. Gabby just she grabbed it.
That was super fun.
She took it from there. I said, thank you. Give me it back. I'll take the last piece.
Yeah. Yeah, she's amazing. And she's incredible. But, you know, every time I've heard you sing live, and we were talking about this, we watched you at the Metal Hall of Fame. You sound just like the record. It's like, I mean, you really do. And then
you
also sang on Who Will Rock You, and it blew me away. It was the first time I heard you sing live.
I push air. I'm very loud, you know, my voice. And you know, it's and I don't have a head voice. I don't have a soprano. So when I'm singing.
Very chesty.
Yeah, it's booming. So a lot of times it surprises people.
Yeah.
Because I remember I did a thing, and this is not to belittle Brian Johnson in any way. Fan, love him, he's a wonderful guy. But we were singing a whole lot of Rosie together at a festival, and my sound man said, like, he had his level, and then all of a sudden I started singing, Brian's singing, he's pushing it up, because Brian sings in that, it's a head voice. A lot of people, Axel does it, everybody, a lot of people do it. And then I start singing, and he's like, oh, shit, because I'm just, like, blowing out the gauges, because I just push a lot of air.
But you also, you're one of the best, probably, frontmen that ever lived on planet Earth.
Because
every time he would get, like, starting the show with Rock Meets Classic, people would get on their feet. It was incredible to watch.
If I have to say, people say, what do you do best? Like, what do you do best? I'm a great frontman.
Yes.
I'm a better frontman than I'm a singer. And people don't realize that frontmen and singers can be mutually exclusive. There are great singers like John Anderson from Yes, for example, or other people, Ronnie Dio. People get very upset. Understand, a front man is the person who engages the crowd.
Yeah.
He's like a song and dance guy. You know, it's his job to get everybody going. And people like Ronnie or Robert Plant, amazing singers, they don't have to move around. They just stand there and just belt it out, and they're wonderful. But being a good front man is another deal. And I pride myself on doing that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So thank you, Gabby.
Absolutely. Confirm.
Well, he's on a list as like one of the
best
singers ever. I know, but it's like 37. And I'm looking ahead of me. And the bass player in Slayer is ahead of me. The bass player in Slayer. I mean, I love Tom, and he's unbelievable. He's a bass player.
Right.
Who made the list?
Who made that list? Seriously. It's like you feel good you're on the list, and you wait a second.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Okay, talking about good things that you are. Yes, you're a great front man, but you also are an author, you are a radio host, there's
actor.
So many things that you do, actor, writer, director, I mean, you're telling me all these
voice
things
over.
As well.
Voiceover.
I was about to say that. I mean, you make a lot of money doing voiceover.
Yes, I have made a lot of money doing voiceover. It was a godsend. When the bottom fell out of my career in the early 90s, you know, grunge came in, that's when I found voiceover work, and it was like, well, you know, because you do VO, the mailbox is your friend. It's like, you can't wait, mail residual checks. And it was like the first thing that started bailing me out of the hole I was in. Then it was radio, which I've been doing over 30 years now. House of Hair, my syndicated show, is 27 years. Wow, 250 stations in North America, Canada, Mexico, Germany. I'm on in Germany now, so Gabby. But, you know, so I've been doing that forever. So I've just, these are things that allowed me to find a new career while grunge was dominating.
Yeah.
And then the whole retro thing came in, and it was cool that Twisted got to go one more time. You know, that was fun.
I mean, it's so big now. It came back again. Everything's back. But here's a story I want you to talk about, which blew my mind when I heard it, is, and so many people have egos that when you're at the top of your game, which you were one of the biggest bands in the world at your time, you're huge. And you, I mean, how many number one songs? It was crazy, right? And then all of a sudden, nothing. Everything goes away for you. Yeah. And you take a job answering phones.
Yeah.
What?
So, you know, so I've been with Suzette 47 years now since I met her. And what a godsend for me. I mean, so many levels that she was, it was 15 and hot as fuck.
I met her.
I was 21.
She is.
And she was 15. Her family's in the mob. They threatened to kill me on the first date, understandably. Anyway, she turned out she was aspiring costume designer, makeup artist, hairdresser. So what better to.
Was she doing costumes for Twisted Sister shows?
All the costumes. Wow. That Bone logo on the cover there, I asked her, I said, I have an idea for a Bone logo. Could you give me a reference for the art department? So with a pen and a piece of typing paper, she was drinking her morning coffee, and she just 5 minutes, she goes, something like this. I go, yeah, that's the idea. I bring it into the art department. When the album comes out, that is the logo she drew in 5 minutes, the Bone logo. And it's on every T-shirt, every backdrop, every advertisement. And she's mortified. She was never paid. And she said, my God, I just was a quick sketch with a pen. Yeah. With a pen. I was just like, you just said you wanted an idea. I said, I didn't know they were going to publish it. But anyway, so we're married. We have, by that time, by the end of the 80s, we had three kids. By 1990, we have three children. And the bottom falls out of the whole business. I mean, I remember I joked that I got a memo that says, we're not doing what you do anymore. But that's what it was like. We're not singing like you. We're not writing songs like you. We're not performing like you. We're not dressing like you. We're not looking like you. Everything you do is now unacceptable.
Now, can I ask a question? So do you, in your own opinion, do you think that it was sudden change in the taste of the audience, or was it the major labels that just made this decision pretty much overnight of what they're going to
support? The metal scene did itself in. Mm-hmm. First, you know, the first thing we did was, well, it used to be the thing, you're releasing the credibility track, you know, the up-tempo one. And then the second track is your power ballad. Then they cut to record company and said, well, let's skip over that credibility track. All we need is the power ballad. So then the power ballad, bands just started releasing power ballads. Mm-hmm. Then the idea came, you know what? We're going to unplug. Mm-hmm. So we're going to, for more credibility, acoustic. Yep. Well, if you're acoustic metal band only playing a ballad, More Than Words by Extreme, who are a great band, but known for one song, and Mr. Big, To Be With You, incredible band, but all they're known for, Saigon Kick, I've been told they're a great live band, and everything is an acoustic song. We just, and it got so overblown, so burned out, so replicated, and that people got fed up and tired of it.
Right.
And they were looking, and the Seattle scene appeared to be fresh by comparison. It wasn't so pretentious. It wasn't so pompous. Mm. I got it. We did ourselves in, you know, too much of a good thing.
Yeah. I want to go back to your wife.
Yeah.
And the 46 years. 47
who's
years.
Counting?
Okay. Yeah.
She's not. I am.
Okay.
It's like, that's one of the people say, what's your greatest accomplishment?
Was it like your...
Getting Suzette to fall in love with me. That was my greatest accomplishment. She wanted nothing to do with me.
Okay, that brings me
Did
to
you
this.
Know right away? Did you know
Where,
right
where's
away?
Where's my camera?
She's your soulmate.
Can you see that?
No, I knew frats. Thank you. So Twisted had just started, about 7 people in a bar to see us. She gets her cousin's ID. She comes in like a fool. She walks right to the front. There was nobody there. And stands right in front of me. Aww. And she's just like marveling at this freak show wearing Daisy Dukes, stockings, thigh-high boots, and a t-shirt that said, "I'm Dee Blomey" on it. And I assumed that she must have been into me, but she was a 15-year-old girl who was just like, "Whoa, this is amazing." She thought she was going to see a girl group, by the way. She heard Twisted Sister was playing. She goes, "Oh, great, we're going to see a girl group. I want to see a girl group." And I just saw her, and I forget it. Anyway, I came up to her. She said she was too afraid to not give me her phone number. She didn't know. The first thing she said to me was, "I'm a good girl." I said, "Come here." She comes over. She goes, "I'm a good girl." I said, "Okay." And I said, "You're not 18-year-old drinking age." I said, "How old are you?" She said, "How old do you think I am?" I said, 17. She said, 15. I was like, "Oh, no." Because I'm already gone. Up here, I am already gone.
Yeah.
I've got to have this girl and at all costs. And then I just stalked her like a wild animal, and she finally caved. and gave up.
That was it.
I really believe, yeah, it's called Stockholm Syndrome, where the captive gets used to and falls in love with the captor.
Yeah.
I think that may have been a relationship.
It's 46 years later.
47 years later.
47. Yeah.
But it was counting.
Sorry. So 47. So I'm talking about frats because I love this book, by the way. I couldn't wait for you to get here so I could tell you about it. She's Angel, correct?
She's Angel. So, you know, you try to, it's based on actual events, story, the book, with fictitious characters driving the story along and bringing all the pieces together. And they say when you're writing, you know, go with what you know. And I was writing about a romance between Bobby and this girl that he sees in school who makes him swallow his tongue, which I've said many times about Suzette. I said about her. And I said, well, how are you going to, like, I used our courtship. You know, she meets the parents, the mob parents, who threaten them, first date, Christmas story that's in there, walking through the snow to go see her.
Yes.
This is all stuff that's happened with me and Suzette in our courtship. So, yeah, she's Angel.
That's awesome. And then there is a guy, I heard you talking about him. Carl's in here, right? You have a Carl, but you also worked with a Carl.
I did.
Yeah.
You remember that? Yes.
So
Carl the guy, that's in my...
And the docs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carl's the guy. Well, I used to, you know, in my struggles, I you know, worked doing cleaning bathrooms and mowing lawns and on a loading dock. And on the loading dock, there was a conversation where the guys were talking about benefits and retirement plans on the loading dock of a department store. And I'm like, "You guys are going to stay. We're all in our 20s.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 19. I said, "You guys are planning on staying here?" They said, "Yeah, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm going to be a rock star." Whew, big mistake. That became my nickname, rock star.
Yeah.
And every time there was any crappy job, anything, there was a rock star, go clean up the vomit, a rock star. Some kid took a shit on the floor, a rock star. So I became like the laughing stock because there was he's a rock star. And there I was working with everybody else down and dirty. And years later,
yeah,
I was a rock star, and People Magazine takes me to my high school, and I walked in, and it was Baldwin High School, and pandemonium. And as I'm walking down the hall with this mob of kids following me down the hall, there's Carl, one of the guys who called me rock star in the loading dock, and he's sweeping the floor, and I'm like, "Carl, it's me, rock star." He's like, "Hey, man, what's up?" He's like, "Hey. Happened. I'm a rock star." He goes, "Yeah, I know. I said, "So how you doing?" And he's like leaning on his broom. And
oh,
like,
my goodness.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I got Carl.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Revenge is sweet, people, by the way.
Was there really a true Jimmy O'Reilly who's like one of the most evil people? Was there somebody that evil at your school?
I had to change all the names to protect the innocent. And the different characters like Bobby, Brett, Jimmy O., they're amalgams of people, but there was an evil frat, which I changed their name.
Yeah.
And these guys were really dark. As a matter of fact, oddly, I became friends after high school with the guy who founded that fraternity, which is talked about, and then his brother, who basically turned it evil. dark and not stuff. When they talk about the war council and stuff,
yes.
It's the first time I laid eyes on that guy, and we later became friends. Matter of fact, he's godfather of one of my kids. He's not Jimmy O, but there those things that happen. I don't want to give away things, but that a homeless guy, all those brutal, ugly things are all real events that happened. And that very end, did you get to the end of the book yet?
Of course I did.
Okay.
I read this in one sitting. I read most of it in one sitting. Everybody was hungry. We went and got food, came back and read the last 20 pages.
That's really sweet. Yeah. It's a page turner. It's only about 200 pages. People say it's a great summer read. It's that kind of thing. Yeah. It sucks you in. But the thing that happens at that Bobby tells at the very end, the story of what happened to Jimmy O, that's true story.
Wow. I don't want to say what. But
that horrible,
horrible... Yeah.
It's unimaginable.
Yeah. She's partway through, and I took it. I'm like, reading
it's
this.
It's unimaginable what he does before he goes to prison.
That's awful.
And it's based on truth. So these are real events that happen. Again, the characters are amalgams of different people who did different things.
Yeah. So was the gun and bat story real?
That's two stories combined.
Okay.
My wife's family threatened to put me in the bottom of the lake.
Okay.
They said, it was like I met the Sopranos. I came in, she says, come over for Sauce Sunday. Before you take me out, you have to meet my family. I didn't know she meant meet the family.
Yeah.
You know, like the mob. And so I came in and the Sopranos were there. And they told me if I laid one hand on their daughter, they would hunt me down to the four corners of the earth and put me in the bottom of a lake. And I believe them. Yeah. They like me now, 47 years later. Yeah. But the gun and bat, that was another mob family. That was a situation. It actually involved rock bands, of all things. Seven Dust was opening for a band called Propane. And there was, and I remember Seven Dust had a black lead singer.
Yes.
And there was a little bit of a thing going on between Propane and Seven Dust. So the management said, is it a gun problem or a bat problem? And he said, what do you mean a gun problem or a bat problem? Well, do we need to bring our guns or do we need to bring our bats? So they wound up bringing their bats and problem was solved without anybody being killed. So there are gun problems and there are bat problems.
Okay, so that's so funny. Yeah, how you pulled everything in.
They didn't want me to be a gun. They didn't want Bobby to be a gun problem.
Right, exactly.
I want to ask you about your necklace because I heard it's a very prized possession. Yeah. Very special.
It's a Lemmy bullet. Lemmy bullets, for those who don't know, Lemmy had his ashes split up and put into bullets, say Lemmy on them, and given to his friends. And I had heard that there was these Lemmy bullets. We're friends, but I didn't think for a second that I would... You know, Lemmy was friends with a lot of people. He was a wonderful guy, you know. Yeah. I'm sure you knew him. Yeah. I don't know if you got to meet him. Just a sweetheart, and I'll tell you a story about Lemmy, my wife's theory on Lemmy in a second, because I think it has a place here. Anyway, and then it was a knock at the door, and it was a delivery man, hand me a small box, signed for it, and I open it, and the Lemmy bullet's in there, and I just was knocked out. Wow. Knocked out.
I got chills.
To be included. But Lemmy, was such a... so key to the success of Twisted Sister. He was there at such pivotal moments and turning points, and thanks to him, and I believe that without Lemmy we would not have succeeded.
In what way he was supportive?
Well, one of the first shows we ever did before we had any albums out, we were special guests on a football stadium show opening for Motorhead. It was a big festival, and there was all these bands like Budgie and Tank and Raven, they were all on there. Somehow, because our manager knew their manager, we wound up special guesting for Motorhead at a football stadium, and no album out, no one's ever seen Twisted. This is 1981 or 82. Mm. So the glam thing is as dead as a doornail. As a matter of fact, it is like the band Girl. Remember the band Girl? LA Guns.
Okay, yeah.
And also Phil from Phil Collin from Def Leppard. They had a band called Girl, and it was in the early 80s, and they were wearing a little makeup. They got bottled off the stage at Reading Festival, bottled off the stage. You couldn't show any makeup, any femininity. No one's doing it. And here we are going on in the daytime before Motorhead's crowd. And I'll tell you what, you'd rather go to bed with one of the men in Motorhead's crowd than one of the women. I'm telling you. It was over there in England. Oh, my God. Well, that's a rough group. Lemmy, we were so worried about going out there on stage. It was actually a conversation. I didn't bring it up. To take off our makeup and costumes and not wear it on stage, because that's how threatened we felt by the crowd. And wow. I said, look, I am not, I've worn this in so many situations. I had so many fights. I'm not taking it off now. And Lemmy walked in. I never even met him. And he said, I'll introduce you guys. The headliner offered to walk on a stage and bring out the band. And so we were walking on stage in full regalia, and you could just see the bottles and cans like this. And then Lemmy walks out. And somebody translated, because Lemmy was very difficult to stand. He basically said, here's some friends of mine from America. Give them a listen. And people just went like this. They just lowered it for a second. We came out on fire. And that show, the greatest ovation of one of the greatest ovations of my career. 10 minutes after we were off stage, could hear the arena, the full stadium going, twist.
Wow.
And then Lemmy comes in and goes, I introduced you. Now you introduce me.
I'm
the same way. So I go out, I walk out on stage, place goes crazy. I introduce Motorhead. I mean, I'm a Motorhead fan. I'm a headbanger. And then I go to the side stage and I'm just, banging on the side of stage. And he dedicated America to me in the middle of the set. He goes, this one's for him. Wow. But from that point on, Lemmy just started showing up at the Marquee Club. He'd go in the front door like through the crowd and just come into the dressing room and come up and jam with us or bring the band on different gigs. So pivotal moments at his funeral, his memorial, everybody was there with such an insane turnout of people, and people getting up there and speaking, and Duff and Slash got up, and Grohl got up, and Triple H, and his shoemaker got up, and a family that followed the band around Europe, and he would always take care of them. They all got up and talked to him. My wife leans over to me, and she goes, I think Lemmy I think Lemmy was an angel. Talking about. She's very spiritual. She said, well, they say that there are angels sent down to guide us on earth, and they're sent down. And I think, look at these people. Every story is like Lemmy was there at a moment. Mm-hmm. Like he was there for you guys at the moment. If not for Lemmy, that's all I gotta say, not for Lemmy.
Yeah.
And our careers would be totally different. These people have all these stories of Lemmy there, all that kind of Lemmy was there for me stories. And I said, so you're saying, I'm pretending my wife's there. So God sent down an angel that looked like a biker pirate. And she said, would you listen to somebody wearing long flowing robes?
Right.
And I said, no, I wouldn't. So I think there's some truth in that. He was an amazing, cool guy.
There are angels. They come in all shapes and sizes.
And I think Lemmy was that guy. I'm hearing those stories. He touched a lot of people's lives, and not just musically, just as a person.
He was always nice to me. Every time I interviewed him, every time he did a red carpet with me, we took pictures. He was just so kind.
Yep.
He was so nice.
Yeah, very rough on the outside.
And he doesn't look like you. Yeah.
Rough on the outside. Smart. So smart. So here's my first meeting with Lemmy, and this is the basis of our relationship. So Lemmy, he loved our band. And, so when he comes, he goes, come with me. Going to the bathroom. Cuts two lines of cocaine. And I said, Lemmy, I don't get high. And Lemmy looks at me and goes, okay, more for me. And he did both. And that was our relationship. When he hung out with Dee, he didn't have to share shit. And when we got to his memorial, they had shots of Jack all lined up.
Yep.
And Suzette said, we don't drink. And she said, should we do a shot for Lemmy? And I said, no. Lemmy and I had a relationship. More for him.
More for Lemmy.
I'll leave it more for you.
Yeah. That's so awesome. Speaking of the fact that you, didn't get high, didn't do drugs, had a brain on your shoulders.
Yeah.
And then you went, I know we both wanted to talk to you about Congress
and
how you showed up. I mean, in your with all your hair and who you were and walked right into Congress and did your thing. And you didn't sound like a stoned, drunk, stupid rock star.
Yeah, they didn't vet me very well. I was probably the most recognizable face, but they didn't do their homework. There are other people that would have fit perfectly. Right. I won't name names. We know who they are.
You know, probably do.
The stumble bums. Maybe you dated one or two of them. But you know, if they had done any research, they would have seen, wait a minute, he doesn't get high. He doesn't drink. He's married. He's got a kid. He's a Christian. What? He still calls himself a Christian. Like you said, he's got a head on his shoulders. So they were not ready for me to open my mouth.
Yeah.
What was going on, in your head that morning when you were about to get on the road?
I see myself walking in there. I see, because, you know, this thing is, they're talking about doing a biopic about it now. It just has a life of its own, because the subject of censorship just continues to plague us. It's interesting how it's changed over the years, but people turn to me, and unfortunately Frank and John Denver are both gone now, so I'm the only survivor of that time. I see myself walking in and go, son, how did you walk with balls that big? I mean, in those tight pants, how did you make your way down there? I'm stunned myself. It's that youthful cockiness that you have. I mean, I remember just getting ready and putting on my cutoff t-shirt and my vest and putting mascara and guyliner on and my shark's tooth earring or whatever I was wearing, my snakeskin boots, and going, another day, gonna go kick some ass. I knew I was ready for those people, and I knew they weren't ready
before
for me.
You.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At the time I was asked to do that, I really thought that I'd be carrying the flag into battle and that the legions of rock fans would follow me. And at the time, other bands just shut their mouths. People didn't speak up. The fans, for the most part, didn't really understand. Over the years, though, I found that there are many of you who were paying attention and were watching. They're not, maybe not the loudest voices in the room at the time. You were kids, but I felt really abandoned at first. But since then, not a day goes by someone literally doesn't walk up to me and shake my hand.
Well, I was born after that.
Yeah.
And I still,
Oh, well, and they're going back and they're teaching about it.
And I was like, wow, this is really dope.
It's a moment. It's a teachable moment. And so many, it's amazing that it's had that kind of life. There's a graphic novel coming out next month called He's Not Going to Take It. And it's about the Senate here, me going to Senate hearings. But they really wanted to explore how I became that guy at that moment in time, how those lines converged for me to be there and speak out at that time. So it was interesting, the interview set part of that, the creation of that graphic novel, because I didn't really think about it. I never thought about it. And it basically comes down to, I was that kid everybody kept telling to shut up and shut up and know your place. Shut up and know.
Yeah,
and finally,
yeah.
I got a mic and I said, I'm not shutting up anymore.
Right.
And that was my memoir. So shut up and give me the mic.
Yep.
You know, I just, so anyway, but yeah, people told me shut up for so long. I just said no more. I'm not shutting up, speaking out.
Good.
Well, just so that one more thing, actually, because also there was a little bit of a controversy recently with the LGBT community.
Yeah.
And so how is it now? How is it? What has actually happened?
Interestingly, I had been asked by the LGBTQIA+ community to be the grand marshal for the San Francisco Gay Pride Parade. We're not going to take it. Queer, not going to take it. And they asked me, a heterosexual, but a staunch defender of personal freedom, to be the grand marshal. And I was honored,
Yeah.
I mean, that's, if I do say so myself, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And especially at this pivotal time, I was so flattered. And I was away on vacation in Greece with the family. And I checked on Twitter and I saw Paul Stanley, who I never agree with. And I'm a Kiss fan. I have the first 7 albums, but me and Paul tend to butt heads, and me and Gene the same way. And he said something about the fact that he didn't think children in elementary school were prepared to make a decision as to their sexuality long term.
Yeah.
And he thought that was a mistake to let children that young. And as a father of 4, grandfather of 5, I know for a fact.
Of course.
Are not ready.
Of course.
To make that lifelong decisions. I don't know if they're ready. I don't know if I was ready in my 20s. Every decade I look back and go, man, I was stupid back then. You know, I mean, you get smarter and smarter. But, and I said, and I agreed with them. Well, I came back. We went out for the day. I came back and everything was had blown up. I'm going, oh, wow. So people are freaking out. And I get a call, the gay pride people right now. So, you know, I called and we had a talk and spoke and they were very upset with me. I said, so I disagree with one thing on your agenda and you're trying to cancel me now? One thing. And they said, you know, and so, well, you don't know, I'm trans and blah, 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 blah. And I said, look, you know what? For the better, greater good, I don't want to cause you guys any problems. And I will just shut my mouth. I'm going to say one more word because this is too important. Gay pride is too important. The whole parade thing is too important. And I don't want to do anything to distract from that. And they said, we appreciate that, Dee. Thank you. They hadn't even announced I was going to be Grand Marshal. The next day, they were on TV saying that they had dropped me unannounced from the Gay Pride Parade because I had said disagreed with them on this front. And then I was on the San Francisco Chronicle. All of a sudden, I thought we were like just going to let it go.
Yeah.
So I did an open letter on Facebook. Because you're not going to cancel me. Not when it's something that I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah,
just people that, like Paul, he just folded. He just apologized. You know, I apologize. I didn't mean that. No.
I'm with you on that.
I stand my ground. And I said, you know, and I spoke to the community. I said, you can't afford to take this position of all or nothing. You need more than just your core group to support your cause. And if you've got people who are willing to march with you, sing with you, stand with you, who don't agree with every single detail of your agenda, mm-hmm. you can't afford to alienate us.
Yeah, it's true.
And I said, and I will continue to stand. My whole life I've stood with you guys. I said, I will continue to stand with you. I said, but no, you're not canceling me because I disagree with you.
Yeah.
And I pulled out some documentation from studies done about children's developmental, not about trans, just about developmental ability at 5, 6, 7, 8 and where they are. And they're not capable of making really, truly rational decisions. 100%.
They've had
decisions.
These studies forever.
Yeah.
This is not new. This isn't anything that goes against that. But what was very upsetting is they will take kids away from parents who don't want to. To me, I don't want to use that word, but who don't want to let them transition at a very early age. And to me, that's why are you taking the parents' rights away? That's a very terrifying situation, and
in
it's
Canada.
Happening.
Yeah.
They're taking children away from parents.
Well,
who
you go
won't
right
let them
back
transition.
To, you know, go back to the Senate hearings, and what I said is, this is the parents' job, you know, to whatever the music, listen to the music, and decide whether their children should hear it or not.
Yeah.
Something I did my whole life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember making homemade like tapes and cassettes for my kids, removing certain songs out of because a lot of like Tenacious D. My daughter, she was like 8. She loved the kids all loved Tenacious D. But there was a song on there called Fuck Her Gently. And that she didn't need that one. So I removed it and I gave her the rest of the music. I also push-ups.
Right, right. Yeah.
I took out cock push-ups as well.
Yeah.
But that's my job. It's not their job
true.
To decide.
Yeah.
And the same thing, it is the parents' job. I don't think anybody's better suited you know, to know the children and know what's right for the children.
And what I don't understand is that, you know, we used to have two sides. We used to have discourse. We'd talk about things. And now it's like people who have transitioned who are saying, look, you know, if you want, wait until, like, I did it and now I'm transitioning back. Or, like, there's things to think about and there's, you know, there's different consequences that you may not know or that they may not tell you. And none of that. You don't hear the other side of it. And I think both sides should be talked about.
This is a big problem, you know? And if someone was asking me the other day, semi-related, they said, I kept referring to moderates. And I said, what is a moderate in 2023? I said, if you're willing to discuss something and consider a compromise, you're a moderate.
Yep.
I don't care if you're on the right or if you're on the left.
Yeah.
If you're willing to talk about it, that's moderate. Mm-hmm. Because on the extreme right and extreme left, we got people who shut you down because you don't agree with one thing that they stand for. You disagree, and they're not willing to talk about it. So moderates out there, know that you're moderate. We got a big job ahead of us.
We do.
Take back some
Absolutely.
Control
we do.
In this coming elections, because we got to unify and recognize that we got to bring discussion back to the table.
There
you know?
Has to be. My mom was a Republican fundraiser. My dad, a bleeding heart liberal. So I grew up with both sides of it, right? When we had Thanksgiving dinner, there were liberals and Republicans, and we all sat together. It got heated, and then we all laughed together. And everybody, like, they listened. They listened. And sometimes there was a compromise there, sometimes there wasn't, but they still loved each other, and it was done with respect. Yeah. Now, you don't agree with somebody or something, it's like,
There's enemies, mortal enemies.
There's hatred there.
These big words, like, that, you know, like you were racist.
You're this, you're that.
It's like immediately it goes into that very strong language.
Yes. Oh, and another thing, by the way, people, if you don't believe science, then we can't hang. Yeah. Okay. I mean, people literally disagreeing with actual science. No, science isn't objective. It's not up for discussion.
But it does change. This is the thing. There's certain things, of course not. But when people say trust the science, well, there's been stuff like for me being vaccine injured in 2007, when I hear something is safe and effective and there's no side effects, that really, really upset me because I was sick for 11 years from a vaccine, 11 years. And it almost took me.
Well, and,
so
and,
to
and
me,
you're right.
When you hear that,
science
I go,
does,
oh.
And then people use that, though, as an excuse to say that science is wrong. No, science is learning and changing and growing and improving. And when, you know, when something is proved not to be effective, we've got to change the science and change the
100%.
Understanding. So, 100%. But we still need to at least try to use facts and information to draw logical
100%.
Conclusions.
Use common sense.
Common sense.
Yes.
And use facts that have been, like, to me, when the fact is, on every medicine ever created, there can be side effects. Every single medicine.
There is.
Right. But so when you go in and say
there's
not.
And if you're one of those people, they get the side effects, it didn't do any, it didn't work for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. So it, but it's like, I just, that's the certain things when people use science against you. Science has to be used and has to be used correctly.
Yeah.
It has to be. And when there's peer review studies and when there's years and years of studies and it's, this is how it is, there you go. That's how it is. Or when you say, I mean, there's certain things I'm not going to say because I would get canceled. Mm, so I have to keep my mouth shut a lot of times. I'm like, guys, that's not what happened to reality. I think some reality has been removed from society.
A little bit. Yes. Yeah. And also sometimes, when it comes to these big subjects like science or education, sometimes you have to follow the money. Do a little bit of research for yourself.
Well, yeah, because the FDA approves something.
Right.
Or the Environmental Protection Agency. There's a lot of manipulation there.
Yes. And I say wait. Wait till you see some, you know, it's like, just wait. Wait a little bit. And I know sometimes when you scare people so much, there isn't waiting. And it's like, that's, you know, I should have done my research when they told me a tetanus shot because I stepped on a nail. There was no rust, but they said, get a tetanus shot. And I got that tetanus shot and I ended up in the hospital with blood coming out of my nose, like with like a hydration drip, like couldn't pick myself, my body up out. And from that day, my health just deteriorated.
Wow.
And now knowing that rust is doesn't necessarily carry tetanus. Most of the time it doesn't. And it's found in barns, in cow and horse poop and in barns. We don't live like that anymore. Tetanus is so, so, so rare that you step on something, even if there is rust, are you in a barn? Are you somewhere where a cow has been? So that's where rust comes from.
I've had so many tetanus shots. I just got one when we went to Africa. I got a tetanus shot.
But it lasts 10 years.
Yeah.
So you don't need to keep doing it either.
Yeah.
It lasts 10 years. So
have you ever reported it is the question.
I didn't even know about VAERS. Yeah, I didn't know about anything.
So
all
there's so...
That, yeah.
Let's say there was a side effect that was never reported. She's just one of who knows how many people, right?
I never missed work. I got the shot. I walked into work and they're like, go home right now. Like I was a radio show in Las Vegas and I walked in and I'm like, I'm just going to keep this bucket here because I'm nauseous. And I go home. And then I called up my producer. I'm like, I can't get out. I can't walk. I can't get out of bed. You have to pick me up and take me to the hospital. And it was so bad.
Wow.
Yeah. It was that bad. So I've never had a problem with vaccines. I've been vaccinated. I had my vaccines and whatever. And then that happened. So now I just question it.
Was that your first tetanus shot? You ever had?
Probably second. Okay. Probably second tetanus shot. And so that's when I started questioning things. And then I always like, I would always question things anyways. I mean, doing the Red Pill podcast and having like people on listening to like the biggest conspiracy theorists in the world, some of them now have come true. So that's kind of scary for me when you listen to somebody and go, okay, you know, so it sounds ridiculous or, you know, that's far-fetched. And then it starts to happen. You go, who else did I have on my show that maybe was telling the truth? So I look at things differently. Yeah. I look at things differently than how I did before. Yeah.
Well, that's good information.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. So I just, yeah. Interesting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah. I didn't know you were dealing with those things.
I did. And,
because you're a professional.
I did.
You
I was
put
sick
on a happy face.
For so long, I just thought that's how life was going to be for me. Exhausted all the time. Tired all the time.
Wow.
Like when I was doing shows, I'd always drink my energy drinks to keep my energy up. And then, see, this is why I have water. This is why I have my water here. And then when it started to take my memory, because I had pain, I always lived with pain, arthritis, all this stuff, like the eyesight problems, skin problems, like, in fact, we're doing podcasts about it. I could live with that. But when my memory started to go, I thought I had early onset Alzheimer's because my father had Lewy body dementia. My grandfather had Alzheimer's, and my uncle just died of Alzheimer's last week.
Dad got it. How old did it start? Was he when it started?
When I started my memory loss?
No, your father.
Oh, he was diagnosed in 2009.
So how old was he around then?
In his 70s, late 70s. Yeah. Like mid 70s, actually, because he died at 82. In 2014.
Oh, I thought he was older for some reason.
No. Yeah. 82. I'm drinking water.
Does everybody know who your dad is? Is that just like well known?
I think most people listening to this podcast would know my dad's Casey Kasem.
Yeah. Well, it's also, I mean, he's a different generation though as well.
You know? But when I say he was Shaggy on Scooby-Doo, people go, what?
Yeah, that was a big one.
I know who your dad is. Yeah. So that was cool. And you came in saying you have questions for us. We'll give you a question each, and then we're going to wrap this
up.
Well,
it was interesting just about your dad, and is that that Matt, what's his name, who played Shaggy, he imitated your dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He did a great impersonation.
That's
He was doing your dad. He didn't try to change. Yeah, and I know he would say, hey, you know, it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that, loves that
voice, did a good job.
That character. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah.
He did a lot of episodes on that, too.
They did, I think it was almost, it was the longest running cartoon in history next to The Simpsons. I mean, I think they actually, Scooby-Doo's longer. Scooby-Doo's running longer with new episodes.
Right, amazing.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, like, how did you become this, I view you as a metal chick.
Yeah.
A metal fan. I have only seen you in metal situations, metallic situations, but I think you're a metal. How did that become your music of choice?
It's just like when I heard rock music for the, like as a kid.
Yeah.
It was like, that was it for me.
Well, your dad was doing America's Top 40.
It was all
it
pop.
Was real pop stuff.
But I like Broadway. I like pop. Country, I like everything. And we were discussing this. Ash over here, who's doing all this, doing our stuff. Ash and Sid, I'm gonna give a shout out to you guys. This is awesome. Thank you so much. But you know, it's like if there's a good song, if it's well written, if it's well sung, like even if it's not well sung, but there's heart and there's feeling, I don't care what genre it is. It will pull me in. But rock,
she has a great taste. I have to say,
thank you.
I'm kind of snob when it comes to music. A little bit.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Pretty much, she has it.
What's your music of choice?
She's first of all, Dee, I've never met. She's like my soul sister, and I'll tell you something. I've never met anybody in my life, including a guy, who can listen to death metal, to metalcore, to really heavy stuff for hours and hours with me because it's like something that touches my soul. We went and we drove. We did a 5-hour trip from Tampa to Miami. The entire time we listened to Rammstein. The entire time. Okay, then we did a trip, and we've done many, many, many trips, but we did a trip from LA to Vegas, and the entire time, starting at the first album, Slipknot, the entire time. So, and then I'm into like, you know, really heavy stuff.
Yeah, but I know all the like the classics.
She
like
does.
That would still, I'm kind of nerdy about it, because I was born like 1993, but my dad was a guitar player.
Okay.
So we would have stashes of like CDs and albums in our house. My brother is a drummer. So we grew up still kind of, till this day, I kind of still live in that bubble.
Right.
Listening to all of that music. So I'm kind of, I feel like I am a little bit older than I am because I'm hanging out with
old soul, you know, but
my generation. Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter could hang with you guys. Daughter, Shai, is so heavy. She's so heavy. And she's, I mean, she's so brutal. And yet she's like, you know, heavily tattooed and pierced and beautiful. She's got a great clothing line, Havoc. And it's doing really well, actually. She just now has gone to mass manufacturing. But really proud because she started to, which I told her, look at the bands that influenced these bands. And she was shocked to find a lot of these people who she liked me. You know, when she, like, you know, Cannibal Corpse. Corpse Grinder.
Yeah.
When I asked him to do a duet with me, he practically started crying.
Aww.
And he said, I listened to your album like on the bus when to empower me, you know. Wow. So you know, he was so moved, and we did and he said, and plus you're a classic rock, you're acknowledging what I do. But my daughter's the one who really wouldn't let me slip into that old guy, oh, they're Cookie Monster music, you know.
Right.
She like continued to expose, she'd make these dad's hardcore mix, and she sent me new like mixes and constantly exposing me. But she's also gone back to, I was helping her, she's moving, I also want to hear Queen 2 playing. I go, Queen 2? I was like, the only album the Queen doesn't play live, that was like their biggest failure. It's my favorite Queen album. And she's like singing it. She like, yeah. She's like, she's so studied. Again, she, like you, and she also now went back and appreciates the classics as well as the darkest, most brutal music.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yes.
And I'm so same. Proud.
So my boyfriend has Havoc.
We need to meet her.
But, you know? Good. He has got Havoc.
Havoc on her stomach? Yeah. Yeah, she's Havoc worldwide.
That's cool.
Her clothes, yeah, her whole thing's blowing up. It's been blowing up for a while now, but she keeps it really cool. She gets requests from people like Ollie from Bring Me the Horizon, you know, contact her. Now, the cool thing about Ollie, he contacts her, and her company says, can I get some clothes, like to wear your stuff? I brought her to a show when she was 10, and Ollie hooked her up with Drop Dead Clothing.
Oh.
And he didn't know that she's now Havoc in Havoc Worldwide,
no way.
And he's wearing her clothes.
Oh, my God.
So it's this full, totally full circle thing. But she says, I said, that's cool. She says, I don't just give my clothes to anybody. I said, who? She said, well, Demi Lovato wanted some of my stuff. She said,
wow.
She says, that'll kill your brand.
Yeah.
That'll kill your brand in an instant. She says, you got to keep credibility.
Yeah.
You know, and so she's, you know, down with all the hardcore bands and doing collabs with them and stuff like that. And
we're so into Bring Me the Horizon. Of course, she brought me the Horizon because she's like, you got to listen to this group. And so, so good. It's so good. Really, we want them on the show. We have to find a way. Maybe we're gonna make Dee get that.
We're coming for you.
So she was 10. She wanted to go see Bring Me the Horizon. And they were bar level at that point. They were playing clubs. And I said, you're 10. You're not going into the club. I said, but I'll get you to meet the band.
Oh.
She was like, really? And she has pictures of Ollie all over her walls. Him and Danny Warsop from Asking Alexandra.
Yes,
the lead singer.
Yes.
So she has pictures all over her walls. So I said, yeah, I'll get you to meet the band. So we drive down to the club they're playing. And it's, you know, it's packed. They're coming up at that point, you know, and they're as hot as can be. And we're sitting parked across the street in our Hummer. And she says, what are we doing? I said, waiting for a call. So, finally, we're waiting. Finally, the phone rings. Huh? Okay. She says, what now? I said, we're going to meet the band. So we drive around the back of the club, and it's a madhouse. You know, it's like fans are outside. The door to the club opens. The five guys come running out of the back of the club and jump in my car, and we take off. And my daughter's sitting in the front seat, and she's 10. And she's like...
Ollie's so awesome.
Hi. And she's like... And so we went out, took them to a diner, and you know, they're hungry, I'm sure. And got them food, and she hung out with the band. And afterwards, she says, "Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me? I didn't even tell me." It was like blew her mind.
Yeah,
you know, like, I said, "I told you were going to meet the band." She said, "I thought, like, you know, like, how you doing backstage or something, not like in the car, let's go to dinner."
Yeah.
But
that's so sweet of you to do that, though. Yeah. So sweet. And you know what? We can end on that story. Yeah. That was awesome.
We could speak for hours.
We could talk
and
to you
hours
forever.
Hours.
Yes,
oh, my other question was, how'd you meet her?
We actually met because of the Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
But
okay.
We met in 2015 briefly.
It was like an acquaintance.
Well, we met, and you laughed at a joke, please.
Yeah, yeah, I laughed at
I
her
told
joke,
a joke,
so
she
liked
me.
2015. She really liked me. No one else laughed, I didn't.
Yeah.
So that was the bond.
That was it. And then we really bonded over Lyme disease, both of us having it. God. Yeah.
I was looking for a cure, because I was struggling as well. My career was over. Couldn't sing anymore.
Wow.
Couldn't be on the stage.
Terrible.
Couldn't do anything.
The lights felt like they were like stabbing pain in her brain. Like she couldn't be under lights at all or in a microphone with a cord. Anything that had electricity would literally take her to her knees, like drop her.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I actually was like a kind of a miracle because I remember basically pretty much 3 hours before she texted me, I just said this kind of prayer to God. I just said, "Please, God, either take me home or... help me to
that's
cure.
Funny how that works, though, right?
Help me to find someone that will get me through this and just helps me to heal from this. Because if I don't have any other purpose in this world anymore, I want to go home. I remember I was so tired and so exhausted from some of the treatments that I've done. I fell asleep. I wake up 2 hours later to her text. "Hi, Gabby. I saw you around here, building that I would go to. Are you around here?" I said, "I am. I'm trying to cure my Lyme disease at this clinic." And she says, "Lyme disease? Are you kidding me?
Wow.
I had it for 11 years. I completely healed. I'm going to tell you how. Let's just meet."
Wow.
And that was it. "And Mike, you're coming to live with me." Like she was in Florida at this point, living in London, in Florida for treatments. And I said, "You're going to come stay with me until you're healed."
And my tour, the first tour after so many years when I couldn't tour, was the first one with you.
Really?
First time she ever got back in singing.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, buddies for life.
Yeah. Totally.
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 Thank you very much,
Thank
Dee.
You so
Thank
much
for
Dee.
Coming.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
All right.
Now I'm gonna go back where it's cool.
Yeah.
Redondo Beach.
Nice.
Right by the water, 75. It's fantastic. My wife and I sit there going, "People are burning alive. And we have it so nice here." Sorry, guys. It's terrible.
Awesome.